on this episode of Edge of the Web.
Less than 1% of the leads that marketers and sales are generating are turning to customers. But on the way, 99% of what marketing and sales works on doesn't drive revenue. So that really baffled me.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Hear and see more at edgeoftheweb.radio.com. Now, alongside Tom Broadbeck, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
All right, hey, we're broadcasting from Edge Media Studios located in downtown Indianapolis. Welcome back to Edge of the Web. For all of our listeners on the audio side of things in iTunes and Google Play and all the different podcast platforms, welcome. Thanks for joining us regularly at our drop time of audio, but on the Facebook side of things, thanks for joining us. And we certainly welcome all of our listeners to jump into the live stream on a regular basis here, 3 p.m. Eastern every Thursday. Every week, we actually cover the latest marketing, digital marketing trends and talking to marketing influencers from around the planet. It's really exciting to be able to do that regularly here on Edge of the Web. You can check out all the shows that we've had. We've had 7 years of shows over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. The show is actually produced, it's sponsored by the title sponsor, Site Strategics, our own company. And we are a digital marketing, agile digital marketing agency focused on developing results that mean an increase in your bottom line. So if you're interested in what we do over at Site Strategics, just go over to SITEstrategics.com. Give us a shout. Let us know what we can do to kind of unpack some possible actions and tactics that could bring your digital marketing success. So if you would go on over there and check that out. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks. I'm the CEO of Site Strategics and founder of Edge Media Studios here. The reason why we do this show, let me introduce somebody else here alongside me. This is Tom Broadbeck. He's the Director of Digital Media here at Site Strategics.
Hello, hello.
Tom, we haven't done this in a while, but I'm going to ask you, why do we do what we do?
Oh, we do it to continue our education of ourselves. Mm-hmm. When you would ask me this question back in time, I said we do it for money.
That's right. We did that a long time ago. The fact of the matter is it's a discipline that we love to do, but we love it because it gives us such an education in the digital marketing space. I mean, I don't know where else you could get this regularly and be able to talk to some great influencers, some great marketers from around the planet. So it's a little bit self-indulgent, keeping our sword sharp and our powder clean. But it's also very important that we demystify and debunk a lot of stuff that's out there and just kind of open up some tactics and discuss it, because there's so many things in the digital marketing space. You can get run over by how many things are out there. You don't have time to focus on, different areas like conversion rate optimization, video optimization, social media marketing. There's so many different nuances in there that we try to bring some talent and bring some education to the mix and really help our audience, right?
Absolutely. And we have a great guest with us today.
We do have a great guest. So introduce our guest, Tom.
Sangram Vajre. You just wanted me to say the name. So
I did.
All right. Sangram, are you there?
I am here. How you doing?
I'm good. And he has some, we were talking before the show, he has some Indianapolis connections too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fill him in. So I used to run marketing at Pardot back in the days. So went through the acquisition of Exact Target. So worked really closely with Tim Kopp and Scott Dorsey.
Oh, cool.
In Terminus, which I co-founded a couple of years later. So it's been a really good, I love it. It's an hour flight from Atlanta, which I feel is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, everything comes out of Atlanta on the East Coast. I mean, you cannot go anywhere and not stop in Atlanta, right?
That is true. And it is super busy, like every time. But I recently got my TSA pre-check, which has been an amazing thing.
For our audience that doesn't know what that is, tell us what the TSA pre-check is.
Well, you don't have to take your shoes off. You don't have to take your laptop off. You can just fly through the airport with really literally 5 minutes. You stop from Uber, 5 minutes, you're actually at your gate. So it is really a time saver.
And I got to ask, How much is that? how do we get that?
No, it's not expensive. I was surprised. It's like $85 for like 5 years.
No.
I mean, I travel every other week. So to me, it is worth every penny.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, for everybody who actually is doing some traveling, you know, got to do it, man. All right. So we want to get into customer experience with you, Sangram. But first and foremost, we wanted to get your insight on some of the digital marketing news that's out there. Are you ready to go for it?
Let's do it.
All right. So let's take you through the latest digital marketing news.
I was very excited to start my reportings.
This week's trending topics.
All right, so first on the dock, it's from Matt Southern. I want to go back through our shows and see how many shows we did not reference Matt Southern. He has been an incredible producer of content over the years, and we certainly want to give a tip of the hat to him. He's always bringing some great information. Over at Search Engine Journal, Google introduces new ways to YouTube advertisers to make some money. So what we've got here are ad extensions. So Google has actually introduced some new capabilities for YouTube ads that will help advertisers drive more conversions. The new feature actually combines the creative solutions offered by YouTube with the machine learning and measurement solutions offered by Google Ads. And you know they converged and brought Google YouTube ads and advertising into Google about 2.5-3 years ago. And now we're seeing the outcropping of that. We're seeing a heck of a lot more useful functionalities that have proven themselves in the Google Ads space. And this is certainly par for the course here. So ad extensions, there's a number of examples on the screen right there where we can actually expand shows. How a movie studio is using one of the new extensions to drive ticket sales. So they break out each and every one of the times. They've got new measurement solutions. They can actually provide cost per lifted users. The advertisers can actually use a metric to optimize their campaigns, effectiveness, and cost efficiency. And lastly, Google's ramping up investments in the measurement partners to ensure advertisers can measure YouTube media with measurement solutions that meet a stricter set of standards. What are those stricter set of standards, I wonder?
I don't know.
we got.
Did you want to test it out?
I do. We wouldn't mind being. Well, we already are a Google partner, but let's see if we can extend it a little bit. Anyway, Google advertising and YouTube really did need this additional outcropping of new tools, and we certainly see the value inside of Google Ads, and in fact, extensions like this, Tom, get a higher click through rate than your actual ad title on a regular basis.
Sure.
So this is where people that are already trained and savvy to those levels of functionality in the ads are they're going to click on those things. They're going to interact with those ads to a much greater degree. What do you think, sir?
And it's a really interesting thing. I think YouTube is obviously a place where, I mean, from an SEO perspective, it is a tremendous. Like we ourselves as a company, we try to do as much recording as possible of our own podcast, our own internal conversations, and try to put it on YouTube. And typically, they will have a higher search engine ranking. Now, from an AdWord perspective and advertising cost perspective, you really have never spent money on it. So I'm curious, and I'm going to start looking into it.
You know, I could also posit the thought that with the optimization, what you can do inside of the content and getting the inbound links coming back over to your domain and different landing pages, you're going to train people on looking for the extensions on these different ads. You're going to have that combined additional effect of increased CTR on those inbound links as well, because they're starting to move, you know, they're unpacking that video content a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to plug, we had a great show with Corey Henke probably 2-3 months ago maybe now, and we really dove deep into YouTube ads. So if anybody wanted to learn more about YouTube ads, go, I said YouTube ads. YouTube ads.
At least it's not the hot yoga.
So YouTube ads, go check that episode out.
Do not search for YouTube abs. That's probably going to take you down a rabbit hole you don't want to go down. From TechCrunch, the author is Sarah Perez. Facebook follows Twitch and YouTube with launch of premieres, the live polls, and fan badges. Tom, take it away. What's this all about?
So Facebook announced a new feature that they're calling Premieres. It's a new interactive video format that allows creators to pre-record a video for their fans and then release it during a viewing window. that they choose to schedule it. So YouTube already had something similar, as did Twitch. So Facebook's kind of late to the game on it, but as more people are using the Facebook Live, this functionality definitely makes more sense. It says, in addition, Facebook's rolling out interactive video polls to more pages and making its top fans feature available to all Facebook pages worldwide. So we've kind of gotten around it a little bit with our we've not this show, but some other shows that we've done for ourselves in the past. Like when we had a glitch or something, we would rerun the show,
right?
And so that, I mean, it seemed like on Facebook's end that it was a live show, even though it wasn't. But this definitely makes sense. So if you really wanted to hype something up, you can do we can record it during the day, and if you wanted it at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, type of thing, you can really hype it up and get it out of office hours and really put some marketing behind it. So
what we're planning to do is all day, every day, Edge of the Web shows each on the hour, right?
Yep.
Oh, Sagram, what do you think about this? The Facebook play with this, the live video, but also the badges and the additional interaction there.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, which again is a really hard thing for me to really dive as I was looking at this story before, because I'm big on LinkedIn over Facebook, just from a B2B perspective and where a lot of the conversations happening. So I think LinkedIn videos and LinkedIn content and the engagement that I typically get on LinkedIn is sometimes like 10 times more than Facebook. And
so to
me, I've kind of shifted a lot of what I do from a video marketing individually, from a brand and all that stuff, to really LinkedIn. And it has been great.
So you've taken a dive there. What are your thoughts about LinkedIn? I'm just going there. What do you think about the thoughts about LinkedIn Live broadcasting? We don't have that yet, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think if it does happen, like, I feel like all in, because again, if you're in B2B, it makes perfect sense. On Facebook, I'm connected to my mom, I'm connected to my sister, I'm gonna, like, they don't need to see what I, and it kind of creates a very different dynamic for it.
Yep.
So when I talk about pure business stuff, it really has driven a lot of really interesting engagement and conversations LinkedIn. So I think it would make perfect sense to do it.
And that's always bothered me, the B2B side inside of Facebook, because quote, Ghostbusters, you're crossing the streams, man. You don't want to cross the streams. You want your family and your engagement there, and whatever news feeds you're tripping through. But when it comes down to that business relationship, it really didn't fit in that space, right?
Or I think for me, it has been the crazy one time I'm in looking at what's happening with my friends over there. They're actually doing party and they're going to Bahamas on a bachelor party. And then other side, like, to be into another business conversation. It's just super weird to have it in place. So I've started to part off like, okay, I can't handle both of these things at the same place.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a mullet, business up front and party in the back. Sorry.
Yeah. So LinkedIn's the front and Facebook's the mullet?
Facebook has been the mullet, and LinkedIn is the dapper dude that's doing business.
Got it.
No offense to the ladies out there. Whatever. All right, so... One more TechCrunch article over from, check this out, Google Assistant. We've been talking about voice assistant for a while, from Frederick Lardinois.
Lardinois.
Sorry,
it's French.
Oh, my gosh.
Lardinois.
Lardinois. Hi. Oh, gosh.
Don't read the article with a French
accent. I could do that. Google Assistant gets more visual. Sorry, Frederick. Probably Friedrich, too,
Oh, maybe.
Could be. Google today is launching a major visual redesign of its assistant's experience on phones. While the original vision of the assistant focused mostly on voice, half of all interactions with the assistant actually include touch. So with this redesign, Google acknowledges that and brings more and larger visuals to the assistant experience. I tell you what, this is fantastic, because the dashboard and the UI on the assistant really needed an upgrade. It was getting kind of cluttered there, especially if you have multiple devices. It's a bit of a mess there. So if you're used to, if you've used one of the recent crop of the assistant-enabled smart displays, then some of what's new here may actually look familiar. So as we screen through on our live cast here, check out some of the interactions there. Google actually tells the author that the update will roll out over the course of the next few weeks with the iOS release depending on Apple's App Store review process, and that's always a toss-up there. Some of the functionality here, well, I mean, you're an Android user.
Yeah.
You use Google Assistant all the time, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my daughter uses it all the time to hear what a cat says, so it'll meow. But also here a little bit further down in the article, it says Google also announced a few new features for developers. They're calling Rich Responses. It provides developers with a set of pre-made visual components that they can easily use to extend their assistant actions. Some of the ones that they're showing here, it's like Starbucks, you can sync in your Google account. So they're calling it Google Sign In, that you can create your account and you can tie it into your Starbucks. And so it'll make an easier purchase through your Starbucks. But a lot of these, the article kind of explains that it's for the, what are they calling it? The visual display is kind of like the Amazon Echo video call. I forget what that one's even called too. But there's more video screen type assistant devices that are coming out and they'll probably be the hotter items for Christmas technology this year. These are more geared towards that. So you can have it set up on in your kitchen for your recipes, and you can scroll through, or you can use it to adjust your thermostat and that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, Google hasn't rolled out one of those type of video displays.
Not a Google branded one. I think there's a couple I've seen that are at least using the Assistant API or the SDK, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Well, Sangram, what do you think about this new user experience on the Assistant side of things?
You know, last week Dreamforce, if people have been following that, Salesforce announced that they're going to do a audio, like, you know, literally you can just talk to your phone and set up deals and all, like, all audio assisted activities. And I feel like that is just the new life or the world that we live in. So I love it. I feel like that's the kind of way we should be thinking about everything. The easier, the faster, the better. The only caveat to all of this is that the security of a lot of these things really gets into, you know, start compromising. So for example, you know, I have an Amazon Echo, and it doesn't have a password, right? And so I can order, and so can my kids. And they can ask and everything. They can look at everything. They can ask any question. There's no protocol. There's no way to kind of slice and dice. There's no security. So I think that's really becomes the biggest question of the day for me.
Yep.
But from a functionality and usability perspective, man, it's easy. It's super easy. So why not?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't mind opening it up a little bit because the pervasiveness of these devices, okay, you're starting to see them in different rooms of the house, and you're absolutely right. The kids can go no holds barred. Well, I've started to get on the other side of the management of the Echo, and they've certainly have dug in and started to create new functionality to kind of restrict the different devices. It's almost like you have, you know, in the old day, the set-top boxes, you can control different deliveries in different areas of the house where you're going to get into the space where you've got to lock down some of the devices. And on top of that, my kid uses his Echo, right, his little Echo Dot. The seven-year-old, he keeps on saying, Alexa, go to volume 11. there's not a volume 11, but literally the kid's punching up the audio, so I got the app, so each and every time he does that, I just go down to volume 5 again. So it's a battle in the Sparks house. Guess who wins?
You do.
Because I've got a circle, and I can actually shut down the device and no any internet access going to it.
There's no, was it the movie Spinal Tap? There's not Spinal Tap.
This is
joking.
Spinal Tap.
Yeah, this is Spinal. There's no joke that Amazon created for turning it up to 11?
No, absolutely not. But
that's a developer's.
Very good reference, though.
There's a developer's.
It also happens in my house where I got two kids, an 8-year-old boy and a 4-year-old daughter. And man, like and the funny thing is, Alexa is able to recognize my 4-year-old daughter talking to her about playing Let It Go and all kinds of stuff, right? So it is crazy. And what I heard is that it records everything that's happening in your house.
Right.
So it's not just when you say Alexa, it's actually recording everything. So it's kind of scary from a security perspective, but I think we've all given up privacy and security for all from that perspective.
Kind of like the Borg. Resistance is futile. We're going to be absorbed. But you're absolutely right. They just think about the metadata that's coming from these devices. They're listening 24 hours a day. Yeah. And the storage on that is just ungodly. It's creepy, man. Mm. Yeah, I'll tell you what's not creepy. It's our newsletter. Sign up for our newsletter each and every week. We'll send over some great information about the guests that we just interviewed, as well as who's going to be upcoming on the show, some news articles, and much, much more. So go over, if you want to text to the number, don't do it while you're driving, to the number 22828, the word Edge Talk right there on the screen. And you can sign up right there on your smartphone. You can go over to edgeofthewebradio.com as well and sign up right there at the header of the site, and you'll not your email will not be used for anything else except sending you digital nuggets of gold. How about that?
Like gold.
Like gold. Like digital gold, too. And it's not Bitcoin. So anyway, sign up there and give some feedback. Let us know how we're doing on the newsletter and see what else we can do for you. So follow all the featured trending items over at edgeofthewebradio.com. First and foremost, let's deep dive with this week's featured guest.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Sangram Vasre, co-founder and chief evangelist of Terminus.
So the deep voice guy, hey, it's always great to be able to have him introduce our guests. Sangram is the co-founder and CMO of Terminus, and we just talked about Terminus last show, so it's so apropos that you're here. Terminus has actually quickly built a reputation as one of the leading minds in the B2B marketing. That, you know, that's why he's deep diving into LinkedIn. Before co-founding Terminus, Sangram actually led the marketing team at Pardot.
I love that French.
Hey, I always called that before Salesforce. Pardot. That's what it was. Through the acquisition by ExactTarget and then Salesforce. So that dates you back a few years, huh?
Yes.
That was an excellent technology. It truly was. And that was kind of the forerunner for all of this reverse IP lookup, the 411 business 411 lookup data. Anyway, Sangram is also the author of Account-Based Marketing for Dummies and is the mastermind behind hashtag Flip My Funnel. All right, Sangram, that's the official bio, and there's a lot to unpack just in that. What in the world is Flip My Funnel? Let's go.
All right. So Flip My Funnel is an idea that I came up with, maybe 3 years ago. So that even dates me. But I was on a flight from San Francisco to Atlanta after the MarTech conference that Scott Brinker did in San Francisco. And I was sitting in the middle seat next to two incredibly drunk people. And the Wi-Fi wasn't working. The TV wasn't working. And I have nothing better to do. So I just tried to put my headsets on, even though they were not working, and had a napkin and a pen. So I started to draw the traditional funnel that we all know, right? Which is broad at the top and narrow at the bottom, which means you can put as many leads as possible from the top and then get as few leads as customers as possible. So the stat that Forrester came out in 2015, just around that time, was less than 1% of the leads that marketers and sales are generating are turning to customers. But in the way, 99% of what marketing and sales works on doesn't drive revenue. So that really baffled me. So I just literally, again, 10,000 feet above the ground, what do we do? So I just flipped that napkin and came up with a flip funnel and started to come up with different stages that we can dive deeper in a little bit. Mm-hmm. That became the Flip My Funnel idea. So by the time I landed, I had written a blog that I published, and it kind of went viral on LinkedIn, which means like five people liked it. So that led to a event, and we've done like 9 Flip My Funnel conferences, ended up writing a book on account-based marketing as a result of it, which we all now know is the category. So it's been a fun journey for the last 2-3 years on that.
Oh, that we want to get into that because this is the it's not only out of the box. This is where digital marketing has taken us to be able to understand that it's not broad based marketing. It's granular one to one marketing, and then being able to expand and be able to touch them in all different spaces. We're going to be able to jump in right into this, but if you would indulge me, we got to give some credence to our title sponsor real quick. All right, so Site Strategics is actually proud to be a sponsor of Edge of the Web, and we are always wanting to be able to provide some value back to our customers. So we want to make our listeners, I should say. Boy, that was Freudian, wasn't it? So if you're interested in what your digital marketing ROI is, we actually have a comprehensive digital marketing report that you can actually jump in and we can start looking at your assets and be able to see how different things are converting, what's the value of from an equity standpoint, and looking at some gaps that you could possibly beef up. It's almost like a SWOT report for your digital assets. So if you're interested in what this report could show you or your marketing firm that's working for you right now, just jump into the URL, edgeofthewebradio.com/ROI, and just communicate to us. There's no obligation. Just sign up right there, and we'll get the conversation going to see whether or not this report could help you out. There's no obligation whatsoever, but we certainly want to be able to give a discount if you're interested, and if we find that this is a solid engagement that you want to pursue, we got a 30% off discount on the report itself. So go over to edgeofthewebradio.com/ROI, and let's get the conversation started. All right. Sorry, Sangram, I gotta pay the bills. So let's jump into this flip my funnel process. So you came up with the idea on the airplane, right? Between two drunk guys. And did they have any influence on that flip my funnel?
No, I guess it looks like a martini glass right now.
I was going to say, did they get inebriated from the funnels?
There we go. See? were they wearing the funnel as a cap? I mean, what kind of lampshade party did we have on that plane? So the funnel itself, we understand the traditional concept, and it's always been a bit of a messy business, just trying to broad base out to customers, to potential customers, but people that you don't even know, and try to hit them with so many different branding tactics, and hopefully they start finding and circling around your digital brand and the different spaces you are, and hopefully you can get down into a particular conversion rate based on all those efforts. And on top of that, those efforts are so far removed from any potential linear ROI, so it's more adjusting. I mean, brand itself has always been this ubiquitous, nebulous area, in that you have to keep on throwing money in, and hopefully customers find their way to you, right?
Right. And I equate to our marketing to, for most part, is like standing on a freeway with a sign like, hey, I got, car wash. Happening, right? And you're on a freeway where people can't really take an exit, but you're still standing up with a sign that says, hey, you know, get a free car wash, as opposed to taking that sign next to a community where maybe most people are driving Ferraris, and now go and do that. You're going to get more tips and more people are going to stop by and more value for your time than actually standing on a freeway. And I think that's what marketing needs to really start thinking. Are we doing the things just because it's check the box things, like three blogs a week, one white paper a month, you know, five webinars a quarter, all those things? Or should we be thinking about marketing and sales as a practice? Like, we need to know exactly who we want to go after and really focus our time, energy, money, resources on that. And that's really what the customer experience funnel that now we affectionately call, I guess, account-based marketing is all about.
Well, so you that's fantastic, and it really does make sense, because instead of trying to throw it through to the masses and cast a big net, right? Yeah. You do the diligence up front to be able to find who is going to be the best opportunity for success and the highest converter, based on a structure, a discipline of understanding your true target audience. Who knew? So give us this. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's. I think, as you put it out there, right, it's just better marketing, right? Better sales process. I almost think that B2B, if anybody who's listening is in B2B, we should know what our total addressable market looks like, our TAM looks like. And I guarantee you that if you ask 10 people or 10 companies or 10 marketers working in 10 companies, 8 of them will have no idea what their total addressable market looks like. And that's the gap.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. So take us through the steps real quick. You got 4 steps to be able to isolate this inverted funnel model, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
So the first step is identify. That means you need to identify, goes back to your total addressable market, who are you targeting, which companies, which accounts you're targeting. It's not everybody in the world. It's you have to know if you're going after the financial services vertical and what Fortune 500, whatever that means. Just have a list of companies that you think are the best fit for the product or service you're trying to sell. So identify the companies. Mm-hmm. The second is, which is what we absolutely missed in the whole marketing automation world, and I'll take some of the blame for it, having run marketing at Pardot and promoting Pardot and marketing automation, is in B2B, there are 5, 7, if not 10 people part of the decision-making process. So just focusing on a lead that fills up a form and harassing them to have a conversation really is the right way to look. We need to expand and make sure that your message is in front of all the decision makers in that company. So expanding, figuring out who are all the influencers and decision makers in that company is really important. And once you identify the right company and the right people in the company that you need to go after, now you figure out what your engagement tactics are. In the original, like the traditional funnel, you start engaging before you find out. So you filter through until you get to the point of the person you want to talk to.
Right.
In this case, in a flip funnel approach, you identify the companies, you identify the people, and then you start figuring out what type of engagement metrics and engagement ideas that make sense. It might make sense for you to do direct mail because you're talking to doctors or nurses, or it might make sense for you to do high-tech one-on-one advertising because you are reaching out to IT people. So depending on who they are, your engagement should now focus on who you're targeting. And then the final step is advocacy. At the end of the day, if you're focusing on the right people, which means it's going to be less, not everybody in the world, if you know who they are, you can't force people to buy, but you're going to create messaging so that they will feel that you care about them, you know enough about them, and they will be advocates anywhere they go.
You know, as I look at your steps, I keep on hearkening back to the discipline of user profiling, basically. Yeah. Profile, that persona that you're trying to attract. And it does come from, you're going from general to very specific. You're understanding the titles, the individuals that are decision makers in the group. But on top of that, you're also looking at what triggers them, what content they're actually, that particular persona, is going to be most attracted to. And there's your engagement level. And then ultimately, the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you make them so comfortable that they'll advocate. And now you have a loyalty, that top of the pyramid connection of warmth and comfort. You're having them as advocates, but also you're going past the what's you're doing into that mission of why you're doing what you're doing. Boy, I just mixed a bunch of different things together there. But it's a linear thing that you're providing, but it is so intuitive. Yeah. Because it moves them along that line of attraction, basically, right?
And at least in your mind, right? Like I think people or customers don't necessarily follow a step-by-step process. Like, some people move faster through the process than others based on what their needs are. But the reality is, if you know who your target audience is, and if you're focused on them, the end result is going to be that they are going to be having spending more time with you. And that's what you want. I remember in our own company at Terminus, before we kind of flipped completely to do an account-based marketing approach, our sales rep will have 1,000 accounts in their name. Makes no sense, right? Because they are obviously going to be batch and blast and send, and this happens to almost all the organization out there. Like, sales rep have as many accounts they want. Now, our sales team has, every single sales rep has only 100 accounts at max. Like, that's the max number of accounts you can possibly have, which means you have to be very diligent and careful about what type of outreach they do. So they are, they just put them in a nurture program and blast it. They know that if any of them unsubscribes, or if any of them are not the ones that they can go after, then they will have one less account or 5 less accounts. So we are limiting them to figure out, like, okay, marketing and sales, you need to work together as one team, which means we're not going to give 1,000 accounts to every rep.
Oh my gosh. I mean, the salesperson in me is petrified by that, because literally you have the ability to create stalkers of the sales rep if you're not careful. But at the same time, they got to be good at what they do. So no longer is this grinding through as many as possible to see what comes out on the other end with maybe a lackluster approach. You've got to hire very smart people, sharp people that understand relationships and understand the content that their accounts would engage with. Yeah. It's great, but at the same time, it's difficult, but it certainly does generate results, because we also know that the 80-20 rule from kind of expanding your services, it's so much easier to expand to different services for an existing customer than it is to actually acquire a new customer. So you're kind of falling right into that lane as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you another example. So Morgan here, who has been an SDR for a year, she just got promoted to an account executive. She has been, because we limited the accounts, marketing and sales, they have only one scorecard. Marketing doesn't have a lead goal. Say they have the same number, their bonus, everything is dependent on sales meetings. So sales and marketing, they just have one scorecard. They look at, we can go into the scorecard in a little bit, mm-hmm. if you want.
Yeah.
But she, for example, she's like, okay, I got only 75 to 100 accounts. What do I do? She's great at videos. So what she figured out is that she's going to run one-to-one ads through Terminus platform, and then she's going to do videos for every single account that she wants to connect with. So she will research about them. She will do a very personalized video, and we will use Vidyard for that as a platform. Mm-hmm. And she will do a one-to-one video for three or four of the decision makers based on what their needs are, based on what the latest article they wrote or something out there, so that she will connect. Her open rate on emails are about 80 to 90%.
Oh.
So it really pushed people to do what they're good at. We're not measuring sales team and our marketing team based on how many emails they send, because it's like, you know, how many can they send, right? Any number. But it's based on how many meaningful, as you said, conversations and relationships they're having. So it forced some of them, some are good on videos, so they do videos. Some of them are really good at like socially engaging, so they're doing connecting and posting more stuff on LinkedIn. Hmm. Some of them are writing really good writers, so they essentially craft a really well-crafted email and they get more. But so it really depends on what your customer and you are good at, and it really focuses on the engagement aspect as opposed to batch and blast.
Wow, you got my gears going on, and in so many different ways. What you're doing is you're leveraging the native skill of a rep, and you're giving them the ability, because I mean they're marketing, but they're also going to utilize their particular proficiencies to a much greater degree than shoving them into a different type of marketing execution or sales reach execution that, one, they may not even favor, but two, they don't even know how to do it and they have no passion to even learn how to do it. So what you're doing is you're capitalizing on what the principal passions are of that particular individual, and you're also getting them to align with customers that respond in the very same way.
Yep.
Oh, I dig it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it changes the energy levels. It changes the level of authenticity in the whole process, right? Because you can't fake it when you're on a video. So the people who are going to be on a video are the ones that who really love it. And they try a bunch of things, and you don't need to tell them what to do. Hmm. They're gonna test a bunch, and they're gonna fail, and that's okay. But that's the part of the game, as opposed to saying do 80 emails and do 50 calls. That doesn't work anymore.
No, it doesn't. And they're going to take much more personal responsibility in seeing that it doesn't fail. And they're also going to take more responsibility into finding out why something did fail if it's coming from them, right? Wow. All right. Well, that's a whole nother conversation. getting back to the flip the funnel process, has there been any difficulty in implementing this type of process, either from your organization or somebody else's?
It's hard. It is extremely hard.
Hmm.
Because you alluded to some of the things. You are fundamentally changing the way people are measuring success. And we have, as organizations and just marketing and sales people, we have used the crutches. Marketers have used the crutch of leads. Like, as long as you get more leads, you're doing your job. So they've been just using that as a crutch for many years and still do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the calls, I'm doing the emails, and I'm still not seeing success. So that means there's something wrong with the product or whatnot. So sales have been using the crutches of number of calls and number of emails. So I think now we are getting into an era, if you want your job a year from now, mm-hmm. again, you won't have your job a year from now if you are on those crutches. It's just not going to work.
Right.
So where things are moving and where we saw a tremendous amount of pain is we had to completely restructure the sales compensation to support a much more targeted approach. We had to change marketing metrics to say that, okay, we're not going to ask you how many people were on the website anymore. We're going to ask you, are the right type of people on the website? Instead of asking how many leads we generated, we're going to ask you, did we create engagement? And what? How are we going to measure engagement? How much time those right people are spending on time? Instead of prospecting every single thing, we're going to think about future customers so we would know what the TAM is. So that required a fundamental shift in mindset on sales, marketing, but also as an executive team and all the way to the board, because the board has always looked at everything in spreadsheets. And now you're saying, well, that big spreadsheet with 1,000 at the top and 1 at the bottom is not going to work anymore. We are flipping it. So it has been extremely hard. But I know ourselves and many organizations, as our customers of Terminus and others, 600, 700 of them, we are seeing that it has changing the way marketing is taking more accountability on which accounts we need to go after, and they're able to create more programs that work with sales and marketing. But it is hard and it takes time in the beginning. Later on, it works.
Right, because the amount of efforts that you're putting into that, it's kind of productive to try to even do that from a mass direction, and you just can't do it. So tell us about the scorecard, because as you're talking about measuring success, there's going to be a lot of companies, and I know that you've experienced that is, it's like oil and water, that they can't understand that it's not about numbers anymore. It's about that engagement factor. So tell us about that scorecard. How do you measure them?
So it's great. It's something that has been work in progress for us for about 4 years. And we feel like we finally have it. And we call it the team scorecard. So team stands for target, engage, activate, and measure. I forgot.
I wasn't going to check your spelling there, but I'm glad we're spot on.
All right. So that's why it took 4 years, because actually, so the target, meaning we essentially made sure that not only we know the list of target accounts, but we know what tier they fall in. So we created tiers saying tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, and now those are the tiers that we're focused on. Tier 1, meaning the accounts that we really care about. We know there's a higher likelihood for turning them into customers. There's a more contract value that we can generate for them. So there's a set of salespeople and marketing programs aligned to Tier 1. Tier 2 is kind of the medium layer, and Tier 3 are the ones that are a great fit but may not have the highest value right now. So we're not going to do as much work on them, but let them come through inbound if we get it. That tiering has allowed us to figure out where to focus, which is really like 90% of like the effort from our perspective.
Yep.
And then it comes to activate. Now, you know, so engage. Now we're trying to figure out like, okay, which of these accounts we want to start engaging. And engagement, again, as we talked through, could go through many different ways, right? Marketing can do more broad-based activities like blogs and events. But instead of that, we're saying, well, we know who these people are. Why not we just start engaging them on their terms? So we're figuring out, okay, tier 1, some of these people are in Boston. So why not do an event in Boston? Let's just do a dinner over there. Mm-hmm. Oh, some of them are in the same industry. Why not do a webinar just on that industry and get the right people in it? Not about 100 people, 10 people. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. Those 10 are the best fit. So engagement has really redefined engagement as being focusing on what it might matter for those tiers. Activate is now coming into the sales world. We, after all this engagement, anytime any of these people in these tiers are showing any level of activity on the website or the product page or the pricing page, then we activate the sales team to say, oh, sales team, all the work that we've been doing, now finally we're seeing people from these companies that you care about, that we agreed that are tier 1, are actually engaging with us on our website. You're activated, which means they are not going to do their own outbound calls and emails. So now the outbound calls and emails that sales team are doing are much more thoughtful.
All right. I got a hand up. I got a question here.
Please.
The attribution, right? Yeah. How are you attributing that engagement to those targets?
Oh, that's a great question.
To the web activity.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So what we have done is we are not trying to measure any and everything. We have thrown away first touch attribution. We have thrown away last touch attribution. We're like, we'll go crazy if you want to just measure everything. Right. So what matters to measure? So now that we know which accounts, so let's say account X. If anybody from account X is coming to your website and is on the product page and is on the pricing page, that is engagement to us. That's what triggers activation.
Mm-hmm.
Not any and everybody who comes to it, if anybody from that tiered account. So it literally engagement is, and the triggering is based on if the right people from the right companies that we care about are on our website on the right pages.
So you're doing, again, we have to know the companies that are coming through. We have to be able to be able to tag them before they've come to the site at all with a cookie, right? So
we do anonymous tracking as well. So that allows us to figure out the reverse IP lookup to allow, oh, these are the companies that are on our website. But originally, like, you know, back in the days, we never paid attention to that. And when we did, we looked at everybody's qualified as if because somebody's on the website, they're qualified.
Right.
Not like, no, not everybody's qualified. If they don't fit in this tier category, then we're going to have a stricter qualification process because they're not our best fit accounts. We're going to have churn issues later on if you don't get the right. So we're looking at business, overall business perspective as opposed to just sales funnel perspective.
And that's really important because it's not only a sales process and a methodology and tying into particular outreach touches. You can't get turned around by the amount of traffic coming into the site. You really have to orchestrate your site to that personal approach as well. Do you guys do you pull off any type of pearls or personalized URLs to be able to have that level of authentic touch that you know nobody else is going to be hitting that page except for Company X?
Yeah, so we are tracking that on our end. We know exactly which company, and we also know what roles they are in. If they have obviously filled up a form or something like that, then we know who that person is. But at a minimum, even if they have not done that, we would know the company and the role. Now, that's more than enough information for a sales rep to figure out, because they only have 75 to 100 accounts, so they don't have 1,000 accounts to go through. If it is one of their accounts, they already know something about that account and is probably trying to jump into that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, Percy, I'm sorry. I wanted to talk about attribution there because that's really a key factor for this entire process of success, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to the T, like target, engage, activate, and measure. So you were right on the measure part of it. It's like, you know, how do we measure? And that has been the hardest part of it because leads is so easy to measure.
Mm-hmm.
Engagement is so hard to measure, right? So it was hard. So it really started with figuring out and making sure that, look, as a marketing and sales as a unit, we cannot be measuring two different metrics. Just not going to work. So marketing and sales had to come together and say, we have the same metric. Our bonuses are focused on the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So marketers, we don't ask the marketing team to generate leads. We just say, I'll create engagement in these tiered accounts. Otherwise, we're missing out. And the conversations, we call it this marketing meeting where sales and marketing meets every week, is really figuring out, how much engagement do we have on tier one? Oh, we only have 10% engagement. Well, what's wrong? What can we do here? So now the conversations are, here's the many of things marketing can do, but which one makes sense to do right now, as opposed to marketing going in a corner and coming up with their own plan. It's a combined effort.
And that's where, I mean, we were seeing the convergence of marketing and sales, and they literally have been opposing corners of the room for the longest time. They have to work together. And if you're doing account-based management, account-based marketing, that's the combined effort. They can't separate because they have to have those tactics, those personalized tactics that are going to come from the marketing side of things. And sales has to be able to give information to marketing to be able to get that input and create that type of content that's going to be more engaging for that target. I love this conversation. my gears are going, man.
Yeah, now I'll tell you this. What's the funniest thing of all of it is that if you ask any salesperson what they're or know of salespeople, their title is account executives. So salespeople have always been working in the account world.
Mm-hmm.
Problem has been that we as marketing people have given them leads. And they have been like looking at us like deer in a headlight. It's like, why do you keep giving me leads? I want the leads in my right accounts. So finally, instead of talking about stuff, we are actually working together. So there's a lot of goodness in this for sure.
Oddly enough, you get marketing and sales in the same room, and all of a sudden you have some great goals, but they also, they're very opinionated, I got to say. Sales and marketing, they both think they can do each other's jobs.
And better.
So from this deployment for different companies, you almost need to bring along a corporate counselor to be able to help them all appreciate each other's differences too.
So no doubt. We call it the therapy session. We all need that at any given. We actually have a corporate coach in our company who comes in and meets with all the executives and high potential leaders in the company every single week, based on like different conversations. So every month, he's here every week to meet different folks. So every month at least once, one of our executives and one of our leaders have met them. And those are like the therapy sessions. That's when you can talk about, oh, I don't get this. And then he would just help them talk through it and all that stuff. I think it's really important.
No, it absolutely is. So identifying the customers is one of the also more challenging. You wouldn't think of it. Think it would be, but for companies embracing this particular execution, the role of the salesperson to be able to find those targets, there's always a risk for them truly knowing the target, and they can certainly be educated by marketing, but you got to know where you're pointing. And you've got to define that to a much better degree than any other broad-based marketing. So do you have tools? Do you have disciplines to be able to help those clients you help get there?
So we as a company don't have like very specific tools for it. We partner with a ton. Mm-hmm. I look at it as a model. If somebody's kind of thinking of like, how do you do it? It's a great question. And I think that's where a lot of people struggle. It's like, well, how do I do it? How do I start? So I look at it and we've been talking about this internally around a fit, intent, and engagement model. So the fit is really where you can use LinkedIn and Bambora and a lot of different data providers to figure out what is my fit look like. Here are the 10 customers we have. We are really awesome. Tell me a list of companies that are like these, right? Mm-hmm. So that gives you the fit.
Right.
Then intent is where a really good company is Bambora that we very closely partner with, is will show that when any of the companies that you have tiered and put in the fit criteria goes online and looks for stuff that is similar to your company, any products or services similar to your company, then it will show you, give you a trigger and say that, hey, this company is ready. Because there are people in this company looking for a solution in your industry, that gives you an intent. And then you get into the engagement platform where again, like softwares like Terminus and others are able to help you now do one-on-one campaigns with them that allows you to now engage with them at the right time when they're actually interested. So this idea of fit, intent, and engagement really forces us to think about, start with the right companies, figure out where they're ready to buy, and then really engage with them at that time. And you can only do that when you're not going in volumes, but you're actually doing it in much personalized stuff.
Which, I got another question there, because from a marketing standpoint, you want to have a feedback loop to see whether or not you're doing it right. Okay, and that comes with a lot of data points, a good data sample, right? Now we're narrowing that data sample. It's much more subjective who we're talking to. So is it difficult to infer from that if we're doing it right, if the target is so narrow that it could be a number of reasons why they're not engaging on that particular marketing tactic?
Oh, totally. I feel like I'm so glad you asked that. I think the best place to start this is not in demand generation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That might surprise some people. Is the best place to do account-based marketing is in pipeline velocity or customer marketing campaigns. So because when somebody is in a pipeline, which means the salesperson and the future customer who you're trying to reach out to has already said, hey, we're ready to buy. We're going to buy from you, or we're going to buy from one of your competitors. At that point, when you start doing account-based marketing, you're running targeted ads, you're running direct mail, you're doing a very synchronized campaigns with your sales and marketing working together as one team. Mm-hmm. Same thing with customer marketing, right? When you are upselling, we think about it as upserving. When you're upserving your customers with a new product or a new service, then you already know enough about them and you can see the win rate on it. So the ideal place to start to test this hypothesis is in pipeline velocity and customer marketing. And then you take the learnings from that and start applying to certain segments based on verticals or personas on the demand gen. And I think that's where it is a wild card. You don't know when somebody's going to buy on a demand gen side, but on a pipeline velocity, you know that they have raised their hand and they're going to buy from you or your competitor.
No, that's smart. That's smart because they're sending signals that are already attuned to what they wanted to begin with. So, I mean, you still have to set up the factors of testing different types of messaging, right? And you have to have still the marketing hypothesis and the marketing science behind it. But you align it more. It's a safer harbor to experiment as opposed to trying to try it out and not be able to get the data samples because you can go wildly out of control by inferring something from such a small group of targets.
Right.
Okay, so that makes sense. Excellent. The last step in this process you were talking about was advocate, okay?
Yeah.
You say the most marketing teams had zero budget to spend on existing customers. Now, we just talked about this, is that your highest amount of revenue comes from the existing customers, and what you're saying is that little or no time is spent to leverage and be able to connect to them. Why is that the case?
It is as a started Terminus, I realized that as a founding member, as we started to raise money, I think the investors and everybody out there in the marketplace always looks at the top line revenue number, and nobody is looking at the overall, like what's happening between the net. And the best companies that are growing are not necessarily growing because their top line revenue is up. Mm. They're growing because they have a net negative churn, which means that they are not losing money. A lot of companies that I see right now have a lot coming in the front, and then at the same speed they're going out, but they are churning off. And that pushes everybody to, get more customers. As a matter of what you should be really doing is go back and fix what's happening at the back end. Either you're not getting the right, so you didn't have the fit and intent criteria correctly identified, or you're over-promising and under-delivering, so you got to fix that. Maybe you need to have more customer success people on the team to support your service or product, or you just had a misunderstood value proposition that's just not working, so you need to fix that.
Hmm.
What I see happening more often than not is it is so much more easier to hit the gong every single Monday when you close X number of deals and feel like that's the success metric, whereas your customers, who are the lifeblood of what a company's growth valuation is going to be all about, it just becomes the poster child later on, kind of like, yeah, we will look into that. And I feel like a big mistake.
It is. I think it has to do with the maturity of just the sales pipeline mindset, is that it's a lot easier to start a new conversation than trying to fix what you broke, or that recognize that you hadn't had enough knowledge about what you were running to be able to even systematize and test this stuff. So it's a lot easier just to go off and get new numbers. I mean, that's the discipline. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I would further to your point is saying that, hey, you know what? The compensation is wrong. We comp salespeople way higher than we comp customer success people. Customer success are actually the lowest paying jobs in companies as opposed to sales. So I think the compensation model is actually wrong. And wherever the money goes, that's where the conversations are going to go. So because the money is spent over here more, people are spending more time here. As soon as you move the money and say, you know what, we need to retain more customers, so we're going to change the compensation. It's not about just top-line revenue. It's about quality growth as a business. It's going to change. But that customer success team is not the one that gets the most paid, or there's a compensation to keep customers.
Wow.
They just keep jobs if they keep customers.
That's also in the kind of the same line as your technical support is your customer service, and you're dealing with people that don't get compensated that much, and they don't demonstrate the passion or the care for the company. You've got to put the money to motivate people to be able to internally advocate yeah. as opposed to externally advocate. Wow.
Money talks.
Oh, you better believe it. So anyway, we can reverse that trend. I mean, you're obviously kind of you're standing in the middle of a current. Everything's going the opposite direction. How do you shift the current here and get companies to understand the inverted funnel, the relationship, the account-based marketing?
Man, I try to get on as many of these kind of podcast conversations to talk about it and preach the gospel of a better way to do things.
Yep.
I think it will require a very significant change. We've already seen that the MarTech world, if you just look at that, has ballooned from 300, 400 marketing technologies to now 7,000 plus technologies selling the same exact persona and trying to get, and that's just unsustainable. Nobody can keep it. There's a study that came out that shows that on an average, there are about 25 to 30 different tools that a small marketing team runs on a regular basis, as opposed to what it was two or three tools 5 years ago.
Right.
So a lot has shifted. People are in the product, in trying to figure things out, and are not taking the step back to figure out the strategy. So my biggest challenge, and I guess the ask for any and everybody I talk to, is that let's just take a step back and look at the strategy. What is the purpose? What is the end? Let's have the end in mind very clear, and then go from there. And it's going to take time.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But it's a discipline that's going to pay off, and it's already showing itself in the marketplace. You kind of see these signals coming from the digital marketing space, where you hear about buyer's journey, you're hearing about these different engagement focuses that help at least marketing hone in to a much better degree. And sales is certainly appreciating that, and they're getting right into that space as well. It's a lot easier to hold on to a customer and retain them and be able to expand sales than it is to try to get new. And that's a big waste of money if you think about it, because you don't have those relationships nearly as much as trying to go after the ones that fit, make sense, and you can give them something more than any top-of-the-funnel engagement expense would be able to provide you, right?
Yeah, totally. It's a game changer.
Well, we certainly, you can tell I'm a bit excited about this. I'd love to be able to expand more on this because it's the convergence of marketing and sales, which really shouldn't have ever been separated to begin with. They're two hands of the same body, and they have to be able to work together. You certainly want to have some coaches out there to be able to help departments communicate to each other a little bit better. But Sangram, it's a fantastic concept you have, and we really wish you all the best with Terminus. We usually finish up our shows here just asking our guests, what really bugs you in your particular industry right now?
Several things, but I'll try to keep it to one. I think what bugs me is we don't define success very clearly. We define success in tactics as opposed to the overall end result. And I think I would love for everybody to take the time to really define what a picture of success look like when things are done, mm-hmm. When we achieve something. Like, what does it look like? Does it mean just achieving certain things, or is it really getting to a bigger cause, wherever that needs to be? And I think the conversations that will happen as a result of it, when we together paint a clear picture of success, that we will be able to trace it back and say, well, here are the right things to do together.
That's absolutely abundantly clear, and it's truly an area where it covers more departments than just marketing. It's across the board defining success. So conversely, we're going to flip the funnel on you here. What excites you about your industry right now? See what I did there?
I did.
I love that. I think this is the greatest time to be in marketing and sales. Able to more connect with people at a much easier level. The fact that we're able to do this podcast and not be in the same room, but feel like we're in the same room. And so there's more technology that can enable greater conversations, faster communication. So we are surrounded by amazing amount of technology that can be used for the good. The question is, are we going to get it? So I feel I'm excited about everything that's happening right now because we're at the center of it.
Yep.
If you're a marketer, if you're a salesperson, like, you know, the world is ready for you. Like, just go for it.
Well said. Well said. Well, for our listening and watching audience, any final thoughts about the inverted funnel of sales and the marriage of sales, sometimes the forced shotgun marriage of sales and marketing? Final thoughts.
Be ready and be okay to challenge the status quo, whatever that might mean in your organization, in your life right now, because that's when great things happen.
There you are. So we certainly implore our audience to go track down Sangram over at his Twitter handle, Sangram Vajre, V-A-J-R-E, on Facebook, S-V-A-G-R-A-E, my gosh, and LinkedIn, Sangram Vajre as well. Can we promote anything for you at the end of the show here?
I know. I think the only thing I'll say, if anybody's interested in the book, Account-Based Marketing, just Twitter mention me at Sangram Vajre, and I'll ship you the book.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to tweet right now. I'm very interested in that.
Right. Very.
I'll tweet you. I promise. I'll tweet you right after the show.
Not without a tweet. Okay.
It's like a cover charge. All right. Well, Sangram, it's been a joy talking to you, and we wish you all the best of luck in your pursuits and Terminus as well as the concept of Flip Your Funnel, because it's very, very valuable, and it's a smart play, and more companies need to be able to focus on that and pay your consumer advocates a little bit more, everybody, right?
Sounds good. I really appreciate it. This has been fun. Problem.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for listening to Edge of the Web Radio, and a special thank you to our production staff over here at Site Strategics, especially our guest, Sangram Vajre. Make sure to check out all of the must-see videos over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. And we'll be talking to you next week. Who are we talking to next week?
We've got Jay Baer.
Yes, we do. So we're going to be bringing Jay Baer back, and we're going to be talking about his new book.
His new book, Talk Triggers, about word of mouth marketing.
Absolutely. So, hey, this is Where It's At. So come back next time, be able to jump into the live stream and give us some questions to ask Jay. We'll certainly facilitate that. So for all of us over here at Site Strategics and Edge of the Web, thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. Bye-bye.